Last week we have introduced the flow meters and we have seen that the measurement that they provide is a quantity that is proportional to the derivative function of the volume of a fluid that flows into a time dt in a tube section. We have seen that we are considering fluids into which the density is constant, so as to evaluate the volume of flow meters, and from that measurement we can also obtain the mass flow rate, that is the product of the constant delta, the density, time the volume flow rate. We have also observed as the flow rate of a fluid is proportional to the product of the section of the tube into which the fluid passes time the average velocity that is kept by the fluid across the section of the tube itself. This is an important approximation because the profile of the velocity is not constant in across the section but features a parabolic shape. In other words, the velocity is greater at the center of the section and is lower at the extremities, in the borders I mean, due to the fact that the movement of the fluid should be considered as laminar, that is, as made by foils that slide one close to the other, and due to the friction between the foils we will have that this effect is maximum at the borders where the foils of a fluid flow against the walls of the tube and will diminish when from the borders we arrive to the center of the section itself. This justifies the parabolic profile of the fluid itself, that on the other hand would complicate the description of the flowing of the fluid, and for this reason is not considered in such a kind of presentation. The first flow meter that we see is the so-called turbo flow meter, into which we introduce a turbine in the tube into which the fluid flows. The movement of the fluid will cause a rotation in the turbine itself, and that rotation clearly will be proportional to the velocity with which the fluid crosses the tube, and by measuring the rotational velocity through, for example, a tachometric dynamo or an incremental encoder, or with one of the transducers that we have already seen in the past, we obtain an estimation of the velocity of the fluid, from which, by multiplying that velocity by the section of the tube itself, we will obtain the flow rate. Going a little bit more into the details, as shown in slide 78, we can observe that there is a relationship of proportionality between the frequency with which the turbine will rotate and the velocity of the fluid that goes against the blades of the turbine itself. This relationship can be expressed by the formula F equal to alpha time Vm. Alpha is a suitable geometrical constant of the turbine itself. Of course, we can also say that a similar relationship will be present between the rotation frequency of the turbine and the flow rate of the fluid. That is, F in this case will be proportional to F uppercase, the flow rate, through a suitable constant beta in this case. And since we have already said that the relationship between the flow rate and the average velocity is a constant value, and specifically the amplitude of the section of the tube, we can conclude that beta, the proportionality constant between frequency and flow rate, and alpha, the proportionality constant between frequency and average velocity, is beta equal to alpha divided by A. This means that beta is more or less a volume. In fact, alpha has the dimension of the inverse of a linear value, that is 1 on meter. A meter, the section of the tube, is an area, so its own dimension is meter square. The ratio of the two quantities will be 1 on meter power 3, that is a meter cube, that is a volume. So beta could be considered the inverse of a volume, and this volume that we are considering basically is the space that is occupied by the turbine in the tube, clearly visible in the picture that is shown in figure 78. Such a kind of flow meter is very elementary, is very simple to be used. It's not expensive. Clearly, we have to carefully select the type of angular rotation velocity transducer that we want to use, because we are considering a situation into which the measurement is done in a location very close to the water. For example, we could argue that an incremental encoder could be better than a tachometric dynamo, for example, or a charge-discharge capacity transducer. But in any case, we introduce, let's say, an artifact in the measurement due to the fact that the turbine can disturb the flow because it slightly alterates the linearity of the flowing of the fluid. The picture in the slide clearly shows how close to the blades of the turbine the linearity of the flowing is, let's say, alterated by the rotation of the turbine. And this effect diminishes when going far from the turbine. So we can say that the effect is present. It causes some, let's say, percentual points of error in the accuracy of the measurement, but roughly speaking, does not change the order of magnitude of the flow rate that is acquired. The error can be kept fixed in a range close to 1 to no more than 3%. Another quantity that will affect the precision of the measurement is the viscosity and the density of the fluid that we are considering. Therefore, such a kind of transducer is suitable for those fluids whose molecular structure does not cause a big opposition to the rotation of the blades of the turbine. One of the limits of the previous solution was in its intrinsic invasivity. In other words, it is difficult to sync to a flow meter based on a turbine for those measurements that concern biomedical application and human organs. Alternative solution can be offered by the so-called electromagnetic flow meter that, on the other hand, requires a fluid with a good conductivity. In the picture in slide 79, we see the section of the tube crossed by the fluid that is represented by a circle, green circle. The fluid direction is represented by those blue arrows. At the two sides of the green section, two conductive plugs are applied. They are shown in light green in the picture, to which two wires are connected that allow to measure a suitable voltage. The tube and the transducer is merged into a suitable electromagnetic field that is applied vertically, so it crosses in a perpendicular direction to the flowing of the fluid or the system. We have basically a situation into which the Lorentz law can be applied. That is, if we consider the vectorial product of the velocity vector time the magnetic field vector, V vector B, first of all we will have an electric field that is oriented in this particular case from left to right, considering the directions of the magnetic field and of the velocity, and due to the perpendicularity between velocity and magnetic field is at its maximum value. In other words, the sinusoidal component in the vectorial product is 1 in this case, because the angle between B and the velocity is 90 degrees. Clearly, this electric field will determine a distribution of charge in the internal sides of the tube corresponding to the two conductive external plugs applied. Remember that the fluid is characterized by a good conductivity, and on turn, on the two surfaces of the two plugs, two distributions of opposite charges will arise that will provide a delta V, a voltage value proportional to the entity, to the amount of the electric field. Considering a uniform magnetic field, the same will be for E, for the electric field, and the delta V will be given by the product of E time the value of the diameter of the tube, since E is the velocity times the magnetic field, we can write B, D, and again you see in the formula Vm, that is, we consider the average distribution, the average value of the velocity across the section of the tube. And finally, knowing that the flow rate is the product of the section A time the velocity, from the previous formula we can obtain that the velocity can be replaced So we will obtain that delta V divided by the magnetic field and the diameter is the velocity. And this value can be replaced in the expression of the flow meter. Considering also that the surface, the area of the tube is the area of a circle. So it is given by the product of pi Greek time d square divided 4. Remember that the radius is the diameter divided by 2. We will obtain finally a relationship between the voltage measured by means of the two wires and the flow rate proportional, linear. In other words, we can write that delta V is equal to 4, the magnetic field B, times the flow rate divided by pi Greek and the diameter. And clearly, this shows to us the possibility of performing a linear measurement into which the sensibility of the transducer can be regulated by the amplitude of the diameter and the entity, the amount of the magnetic field we are using. Clearly, the most suitable parameter that we can use to change the sensibility of the transducer is the amount of the magnetic field, because the diameter of the channel is typically fixed and we cannot change the tube for improving the sensibility of the measurement that we are doing. But in any case, flow meter is linear. Clearly, it requires a good conductor chosen as fluid. We have to observe, however, that it would be better to consider not a constant magnetic field, but a field generated, for example, by a alternate current that crosses a solenoidal circuit, an inductor. In other words, it is better to have a magnetic field that features a sinusoidal waveform. This is due to the fact that measurement after measurement, the charge distribution that is present in the two internal sides, in the two internal walls of the green tube in the picture, will turn out into an accumulation of charge present, in our case, in the left side, in the left internal side, and in the right internal side. If the charge is not periodically eliminated, is not periodically cancelled, the measurement will be affected by an offset voltage that is present even when no fluid at all will cross the channel, the tube. Clearly, we can measure such a kind of offset and we can subtract it from the measurement when we acquire in the microprocessor the measurement itself. But if we don't want to have such a kind of effect, we can use an alternate power supply so as to alternate the direction of the field, of the magnetic field, that we irradiate towards the tube, towards the channel into which the fluid is flowing. This will cause an alternate orientation of the electric field E and will change periodically the amount and also the nature of the charge that will be accumulated in the two internal walls of the channel. So into a wave period we will have positive charge at the left side and a negative charge at the right side. In the next half period of the waveform, we will have the opposite distribution, negative in the left and positive in the right. And clearly, this solution, this trick, we could say, will prevent a permanent distribution of charge that in the time will give the offset we mentioned before. This is another kind of transducer that deprives the energy to the physical phenomenon that is measuring. We have already seen such a kind of effect in thermal measurements. But we can say that even in this case, to obtain a voltage at the two plugs externally applied, we need to subtract some quantity of energy to the flowing fluid, because the generation of the charge distribution in the internal walls with a very neglectable effect, but in any case will make the flowing of the fluid itself a little bit slower. Of course, this effect, we can say, does not alter significantly the measurement, but in any case we have to keep in mind that it is existent. Another source of approximation in the measurement, as we already said, is to consider the average velocity instead of the real velocity of the fluid present in all the points across the section of the channel. If the real velocity is not constant, as we supposed, but instead is distributed as a parabolic curve that is maximum in the center and minimum at the borders of the tube itself, correspondingly we will have an electric field that will be maximum in the center of the tube, or the section of the tube, and minimum into the internal walls, where we have imagined that we have a charge distribution. This non-uniform electric field will generate density of charge, in other words, current flows from the center toward the borders of the section, and such a kind of a phenomenon will disturb both the measurement but even the normal flow rate of the fluid. In other words, the flow rate will be a little bit slower than it would have been if no phenomena of this type would have happened. The measurement, therefore, will a little overestimate the real flow rate present in the tube. The error is again kept limited, so as it is no more than 2% of the real measurement. Consider that due to the fact that we want to apply an alternate power supply to the transducer to avoid accumulation of charges into the internal walls, the output will be in phase or in counter phase with the power supply, depending on the direction of the fluid. And to highlight this information, we need a synchronous rectifier electronic circuit to be connected to the transducer before the analog to digital conversion. Another important and positive characteristic of the transducer is the total absence of mechanical parts that will not modify, let's say, the correctness of the flowing, so the problems that we have highlighted in the case of the turbine, for example, in this case are completely absent. Another flow meter that is very popular and very often applied, especially in biomedical applications, based on the ultrasound principle, is the one shown in slide 81. In this case, we have a chamber into which the fluid flows. You see the green, the light green part shown in the figure. The fluid flowing is highlighted in blue. And in this chamber, ultrasounds propagates from a couple of transducers receivers unit. In particular, we see that we have in the right side and in the left side of the flow meter a unit that works at the same time as emitter of an ultrasound beam and a receiver of the beam that comes from the other generator. So the working principle is that we have a first phase into which the unit at the left side of the transducer of the chamber will generate an ultrasound beam that will be received by the unit in the right part. Then we have a second phase of the measurement into which the two roles are reversed, so the generation comes from the right side and will be received in the left unit. We can measure the time needed for the two beams to cross the chamber, and we have written them in the slide. The first interval of time from the first generator to the second generator sees a time that is the ratio between the length of the chamber divided by the sum of the two velocities. C is the velocity of the ultrasound beam, V is the velocity of the flow. In this case, the ultrasound beam propagates in the same direction of the fluid, so the mechanical action of the two fluids that are running in the chamber is a superposition of the effect. In other words, the ultrasound beam is somehow accelerated by the presence of a fluid that goes into its own same direction. For this reason, T12 is L divided by C plus V. The same consideration cannot be made in the second phase, because in this case the direction of the ultrasound beam is opposed to the one of the fluid. This makes the propagation of the ultrasounds in the chamber a little bit slower, and the second formula takes into account this situation and is equal to L divided by C minus V. Now, if we evaluate the subtraction between the two times, so the two duration of the measurements, we will have the final expression, the final formula, into which this difference is equal to the product of the velocity of the fluid time the length of the chamber multiplied by 2 and divided by the difference of the squared velocity of the ultrasounds minus the squared velocity of the fluid. But since clearly the ultrasound velocity is much, much, much bigger than the velocity of the fluid, we can neglect this last one quantity in the denominator, and we can approximate this expression by writing two the product of the velocity times the length of the chamber divided by c squared. Clearly, in this case, we introduce a very small error in the measurement, but we obtain a transducer whose output is simply the difference of two intervals of time, clearly, that is really proportional to the physical magnitude that we want to measure, that is the velocity of the fluid. And it is easy to transform this measurement into the flow rate, because we will multiply the velocity times the area of the section of the propagation chamber. To modify the sensibility of the measurement, clearly we have no other possibility than to change the length of the camera itself, because the velocity of the ultrasound is of course fixed. The mechanism will foresee that a microprocessor will control both the generation phase and the echo reception phase in the two transducers that are located at the two sides of the propagation chamber. In other words, a microprocessor will start the generation of the ultrasound in the first transducer and will receive, for example with an interrupt request, the echo in the second transducer. Then it will trigger the generation of the ultrasound beam in the second transducer and will receive an interrupt request from the first transducer when the echo has been received by this last one. The measurement is clearly very non-invasive, so this is the reason why it is often applied to measure, for example, the profile of the flowing of the blood in veins and arteries, just to highlight eventually problems in the passage of the blood due to atherosclerosis or other issues or other troubles that can affect a patient. Finally, another transducer that can be used in all those applications into which a bottleneck can be applied to the tube into which the fluid flows, like for example in foods industries, and clearly not in biomedical measurement, is the so-called Venturi tube or Venturi meter. In this case, as you can see from the picture in the slide 82, we have a part of the tube into which the diameter is really less with respect to the normal size, the normal section of the tube itself. In other words, there is an internal area of the tube with a diameter d, lowercase, that is very small if compared to the diameter d, uppercase, present before and after the bottleneck. In such a kind of transducers, we neglect the friction of the fluid with respect to the walls of the tube, and considering the Bernoulli law, we can say that the product of the density times the square of the velocity divided by 2 plus the pressure that the fluid exerts on the walls of the tube plus the product of density, acceleration of gravity, and height with respect to a certain reference point is constant. This is another, let's say, presentation of the conservation of the energy in systems, because rho v squared divided by 2 is something that is related to the kinetic energy of the fluid. The pressure is the force, so somehow something that considers the energy lost due to the pushes, the pulling action of the fluid against the walls, and rho gh is more or less the potential energy. The sum of all these contributes is considered fixed before and after, in this particular case, the bottleneck, and even in the bottleneck, because as we know very well, due to the need for the fluid to pass across a smaller section, we will have an increment into the velocity of the fluid that will cause a balancing in the equation, like the one shows in the first formula in slide 82. In this formula, we represent the energy, let's say, situation before and inside the bottleneck. You can see that in both the terms of this equation, the potential energy is not present, and this is obvious because the height of the fluid is considered constant if the tube is horizontal, and rho gh will be present before and inside the bottleneck, so in the equation it is not necessary to be considered, because the two terms will eliminate one the other. Instead, we can see that outside the bottleneck we'll have, let's say, a kinetic term equal to rho times the square of the velocity outside the bottleneck V1 divided by 2, plus the pressure P1 against the walls in the part of the tube that is not inside the bottleneck. Inside the bottleneck, instead, we will have another pressure, P2, to which the term rho v squared 2 divided by 2 is added. Consider that the section is P Greek divided by 4 time the product of the big diameter externally to the bottleneck, and time d lowercase the small diameter inside the bottleneck. Multiplying these two quantities by the velocities v1 and v2, we have the flow rate before and inside the bottleneck. And the flow rate is clearly the same, because the fluid continues its flowing. Also, a bottleneck is present. This allowed to us to use the previous formula by performing a suitable pressure measurement. We have already described several kinds of transducers that allow to us to perform a pressure estimation. For example, based on very, very thin coils of material into which a strain gauge has been inserted, and due to the deformation of the strain gauge and its own resistance variation, we will obtain an electronic signal that is proportional to the difference in the pressure before and beyond the coil into which the strip into which the strain gauge is inserted. So we start from the hypothesis that it is possible to measure the difference in pressure P1 minus P2, and introducing the expression of the flow rate previously defined as depending on, in the first case, the velocity V1 and the big diameter D uppercase, and in the second case on the velocity V2 and the small diameter D lowercase, we can say that the difference of the two kinetic terms rho V square 1 divided by 2 minus rho V square 2 divided by 2 can be transformed into a new expression into which the flow rate is present. After a few calculations, we will obtain this term, that is 16 times rho, the flow rate squared, divided by 2 pi Greek squared, that multiplies the difference between 1 divided the small diameter power 4 minus 1 divided the big diameter power 4. Here the sensibility of the transducer can depend mainly on the geometrical characteristics of the tube of the transducer itself. In other words, we will have that changing the amplitude of the bottleneck or the diameter of the external tube, we can modify the sensibility of the transducer. But clearly this is not done in progress, that is when we are measuring the flow rate, because to change the geometrical characteristics is always a not easy task. Moreover, consider that in this case the diameters are in the denominators of the formula, so we have in this case a non-linear effect on the measurement itself. But this idea of the non-linearity present in the transducer is, let's say, a more important issue looking at the value of the flow rate, because we see that clearly the dependence of the flow rate on the measurement of the pressures is quadratic. In other words, we could write that P1 minus P2 is equal to a constant that multiplies the flow rate power 2. And we know that typically this is not an effect that we like due to the problems that we will have with the analog to digital converter following the transducer. So we can say that such a kind of transducer should be used for those velocities, those flow rates that are not so high. If you imagine the behavior, the shape of a parabolic curve, you can easily see that the parabolic curve, when the values of the axis parameter are small, can be approximated more or less with a line. In this case, the measurement is not so critical for the successive binary conversion, and it could be considered acceptable. But clearly limits us to perform a measurement only when the flow rate that we are considering are quite slow. Consider also that in the bottleneck we will have a lower pressure than outside, and that this, let's say, loss of energy is only partially recovered in the final enlargement of the tube. This can cause pressure drops due to the presence of vortices and or friction due to viscosity effects. This suggests to carry out the measurement of the pressure P2 as much as possible in the center of the bottleneck itself. And consider also that since the pressure diminishes, the velocity internally to the bottleneck will augment due to the conservation of the overall energy in all the parts of the tube that we are considering. Now we leave the measurement of the flow rate of a fluid that crosses a tube, a channel, and we concentrate our attention onto the acquisition of the level of a fluid, of the water, for example, that can be contained into a suitable container like a tub or like a dam or what else can keep a certain fluid inside. We will consider three solutions, a mechanical one, ultrasound based one, and a final solution that will exploit the variation of electronic parameters of a suitable circuit. The first one can be observed in slide 83 and consists in a floating element that is located on the surface of the fluid whose level is under measurement, and is connected to a pulley to which angular position transducer is connected. You see in the figure that a suitable wire connects the pulley with the floating element, but in the other side of the other edge of the wire, a suitable weight is applied. Clearly, when the level augments or diminishes, the pulley will rotate and the angular transducer will provide the entity of the rotation performed. If the rotation is not so wide, we can consider to apply an angular potentiometer to such a kind of situation, but if not, we will need certainly incremental encoder that will provide direction, entity of the rotation, and will give a digital output that can be inserted, can be sent into the port of a microprocessor without basically any intermediate electronic circuit or analog to digital converter. The weight assures that the wire, the rope, will be always tensed and no problems will affect the precision in the measurement. Clearly, this solution works well for those containers whose height is very high. If we consider the next solution based on ultrasound beam, it is easy to understand that if we are into a dam, for example, to send an ultrasound beam that must cover hundreds of meters, clearly it is not an easy task due to the high quantity of energy that must be generated to have such a strong ultrasound beam. So the first solution, let's say the pulley-based solution, is for big containers. For medium, small ones, we can consider to have an ultrasound generator that is located in the bottom of a tub or of the dam we have considered. And we have to consider that the beam will be reflected, at least in part, by the surface of the fluid we are considering. We well know, in fact, that when there is an interruption, let's say, between a fluid and another fluid with different characteristics, a beam of every type, light, sounds, ultrasounds, whatever, will in part continue its flowing when crossing the interface between the two media. In part will be reflected. This is the part that is interesting for us because we will have in the bottom of the tub both a transmitting unit and a receiving unit that will acquire the echo of the reflected ultrasound beam and will notify to a microprocessor the arrival of this echo. So if we are able to measure the time between the generation and the reception of the echo, we will have that this time is proportional to two times the level we have to measure divided by the velocity of the ultrasound beam itself. There is an effect that is, there is a drift, better to say, in such a kind of measurement due to the temperature, because the velocity of the ultrasounds is different when we consider different seasons in the year, for example. When the fluid temperature is high, the velocity is typically higher than when the temperature is low. So we run the risk in such conditions that the measurement of the level made, for example, in summer will be different from the same measurement of the same level made in winter. To avoid such a dependence, we can put in the medium distance between the level, the height that we want to measure, and the basis of the tub or of the dam into which the generator is located, a fixed obstacle located at a known height. So both the obstacle and the surface of the fluid that we are measuring will reflect the beam, and we can apply the same formula to both the cases. So since the velocity is always the same, at the end we will have that the relationship between the two heights will be proportional to the ratio between the two times we have to expect for reaching the surface of the fluid or the fixed obstacle and for receiving the echo. So looking at the formula, age, that is the level we want to measure, is equal to HR, that is the known age at which the obstacle is located, time, the ratio of the T time necessary for receiving the echo of the ultrasound beam, divided by TR, that is the time necessary for receiving the echo from the fixed obstacle located at the known height. In such a case, basically, by measuring inside the microprocessor the time necessary for the receiving the two echoes, we will have a very precise estimation of the level of the fluid that we are considering. Clearly, such a kind of an approach doesn't work so well if the heat is very high, because we have to generate a very strong beam, and we need a very important and expensive hardware to do this. A final approach to perform the measurement of the level of a fluid that typically is used for those applications that are relative to laboratory measurement envisions the presence of two armors merged into a container that allow resistive or capacitive measurements. In the first case, the resistor must be seen as a wire whose section is represented by the surface of one of the two armors. Looking at the picture in slide 84, we see that this section is given by the product of L times H, where L is the size, horizontal size of the armor, and the H is the level of the liquid merged into a certain tab that represent, let's say, the virtual wire whose resistance we are trying to evaluate. If we apply two connections, two wires, to the first armor and to the second armor, we will have, let's say, a theoretical wire whose resistance is given by the product of delta, that represents the length of this virtual wire, rho, that is the resistivity, and A, that is the surface, the section of this wire, given by L time age. Clearly, we can apply a direct current to the circuit, and depending on the age, on the level of the fluid, conductive fluid, I remember, we will observe a variation in the entity of the measurement due to the variation of the resistance. Notice that the resistance is not proportional to the physical magnitude that we want to highlight, to the level, I mean. So the correct way to perform the measurement is to apply a current and to measure the corresponding voltage at the two connection, at the two output wires joined, linked to the two armors that we have considered. That is a conductance measurement, not as usual when we provide a voltage and we measure a current, but exactly the inverse as we did in the case of the reluctance-based transducer.